Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today we're going to discuss cyber trust, why building trust is so critical for financial institutions and the relationship they have with their account holders, as well as the key role cybersecurity education, consumer privacy, and cybersecurity empowerment play in long-term cyber trust. With me today is Javelin Strategy Researcher's Tracy Kitten, Director of Fraud and Security, and Suzanne Sando, Senior Analyst of Fraud and Security. They break down the recent Cyber Trust and Banking Scorecard report, which ranks 21 of the largest financial institutions in the U.S. based on the cybersecurity functions, capabilities, tools, and education they provide consumers that really helps strengthen and build cyber trust among account holders. Tracy and Suzanne, it's so great to have you with us today. To start, I'd like to begin with a general view of cyber trust. Suzanne, what is it and why does it matter?
So the relationship between a consumer and the organization that they are doing repeated business with is contingent on trust. You know, you're not going to go back and continue to do business with a company that you don't feel takes you seriously, takes your privacy and your general livelihood seriously. So when you look at it through the lens of financial institutions, they are arguably one of the most trusted organizations, which I think is why building and maintaining what we call cyber trust is so important for FIs. You know, it's the key to building a long-lasting relationship with consumers. And that level of trust that a consumer has in their FI really has an effect on, you know, what they allow their FI to do and then how they, the consumer, acts in terms of cybersecurity behaviors. So to dig a little bit deeper into what cyber trust actually is, Javelin created a scorecard called Cyber Trust in Banking that ranks 21 U.S. financial institutions. And we broke cyber trust down into three main categories. So we were looking at cybersecurity education, consumer privacy, and cybersecurity empowerment, which, you know, each had their own set of criteria that would then be used to rank these institutions. And what Javelin deemed most important is the institutions that prioritize these pillars were considered the best positioned to kind of foster that trustworthiness and those long-term relationships.
That's a great point, Suzanne, and I'll just kind of piggyback on some of that because, you know, the impetus for this cyber trust and banking scorecard was really, you know, for us to get a feel for how much are financial institutions in the U.S. specifically focusing on empowering consumers from a cybersecurity perspective. We worked on this, you know, 12 months before it actually published, but what's really interesting, and I would almost, you know, say ironic about it, is that right after our report published, we saw so many institutions really putting into motion some of the recommendations that we listed in the report, right? So reaching out to consumers to help them assess their own cybersecurity awareness in the wake of many of the things that we've been hearing about regarding Zelle specifically. So a lot of the pressures from Congress there on the leading institutions to really shore up P2P scams and P2P payments. And so we have seen financial institutions respond in a very positive way. Obviously, there's always more that can be done, but that made me feel really good about the report because it was very timely in that regard and will continue to be timely. Right? Because cybersecurity education and empowerment and the need for those things is not going to go away anytime soon.
Exactly.
Tracy, I'm so glad that action was taken. How do the actions and beliefs of consumers play into defining cyber trust?
So, you know, I mentioned earlier that trust has that effect on what consumers are going to allow and tolerate from their FI, and then in turn how they act and react with their own cybersecurity behaviors. So, for example, consumers who trust their primary financial institution are way more comfortable than those who don't trust their FI with cybersecurity relevant data being collected by their FI. So for a further example, of consumers who trust their FI, 62% are comfortable with their financial institution collecting PII versus just 30% of consumers who don't trust their FI. So when that relevant data is being collected, if a consumer trusts their FI and they know what's happening with that data, they're okay with it. If it's being used for the right purpose, they don't have a problem with it. And I think that the important takeaway here is that FIs can interpret this as a level of cyber trust, but that doesn't mean that they can, you know, just go crazy with collecting customer data. Only things that are absolutely necessary for business should continue to be collected. You don't want to abuse that trust because consumers are going to react if they feel like their FI is overstepping their bounds. And that trust is destroyed in an instant when privacy expectations aren't met. And I think we'll talk more about this later, but I think the main point here is that transparency matters.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, Suzanne. And I think that, you know, there's something a little deeper here that goes into the messaging too. And that is that financial institutions have to collect data in order to, you know, enhance security and also in order just to make, you know, the life cycle of, or the, you know, the span of the relationship that they have with a consumer, whether that be a customer or a member, they have to have data about that person. The key here is being transparent. And as long as the FI is transparent about what they're collecting and why, our data shows that consumers are more than happy to share that. So for instance, if a consumer knows that tracking their behaviors is going to enhance security, if they know that using biometrics authentication is going to enhance security, they're more than willing to share that information and have that information be used about themselves or about their physical being. And that's just something that, you know, financial institutions historically have not been super transparent about. I think FIs have historically feared that consumers are going to push back, or they're going to be freaked out on some level if they think biometric data is being captured or it's being used. And anytime the word cybersecurity comes up, consumers are going to run, you know, and hide under a rock. That's not the case. Consumers are much more cyber aware than they were even 5 years ago. And they want to be educated. They want to be talked to. We shouldn't treat them like children who don't understand anything about cybersecurity, I think is one of the bigger takeaways.
That's a big point too, I think, because the more a consumer knows, the more they're going to trust their FI, because they have a better understanding of what is out there that's threatening their privacy. It's threatening their accounts, their own security. And that's why I think when we did this scorecard, that's the strong foundation of, you know, having that protection for your accounts, for your identity, for, you know, the fact that you need to have the knowledge to better detect and report scams, practicing mm-hmm. those cybersecurity behaviors. All these things play into having then the insight and the drive to actually take advantage of what your FI is offering, whether it's the privacy policy rights, whether it's the data collection use, or it's fraud alerts and card controls. It all plays together into creating that general sense of trust.
And Suzanne, to your point, how can financial institutions bridge gaps in service and cyber trust?
So I think this is a good time to dive deep into what these three pillars are. The first of which is cybersecurity education, and that was the most heavily weighted pillar. You know, it's in a financial institution's best interest to provide comprehensive educational materials from cybersecurity, fraud, scams. And, you know, every FI has educational materials, but it goes deeper than just, you know, quote, having them. When educational material is actually used by consumers, the vast majority say it's useful, which is great. But the problem is many FIs don't have it organized or easy to find in a way that is convenient for the consumer. So, you know, if you look at FIs that use external search functions within their online website search, that really muddies the waters. You're pulling in a lot of results that maybe aren't necessarily relevant. And relevancy and usefulness is incredibly important for a consumer to find real use from these educational materials. I think that topic coverage and format is another thing that we focused a lot on. One of the reasons that educational materials aren't being used is just because of the way it's presented to consumers. And that's why we emphasize the importance of having materials in all formats, because you need to be able to readily engage a consumer. And if you're doing it through articles and white papers, it's not enough. I think that audio and video content aren't used enough, which is a shame, because I think we can all agree that, you know, it's significantly easier to consume audio. If you throw on a podcast, you throw on a 2-minute video while you're doing the dishes, you're still at least consuming that content. You're understanding the messaging. Whereas having to sit down on the couch and read a 10-minute article, it takes a lot more time and effort for a consumer to actually engage into that educational material.
Yeah, and I'll step in there too, just quickly, Suzanne, to kind of, you know, just support what you're saying. And I think this goes back to kind of what we were talking about earlier too, making it easy to find, right? So we have seen in the wake of some of these, you know, messages about scams, particularly where the FIs are being more proactive, they're reaching out to their customers and members about scams and what to look for. They're also making, you know, some of those alerts more visible on their actual homepages. So to your point, if you've got all of the educational materials buried way deep into the website, where no one can find them, they're not doing anyone any good. And the other point I want to make, just to, you know, kind of echo what you've said, let's think about how we like to take in information, right? We don't want to have to download a lot of white papers and read them. I mean, when I'm working, I find it very easy just to put on a podcast in the background. I like to do the same thing with webinars, and I'm able to, you know, be at my desk. I can still check my email, but I'm also able to do that multitasking. And it's just a more engaging way to interact and educate.
And speaking of engaging, one of the other things that we looked at in the scorecard were interactive fraud and cyber assessments, and only 14% of FIs were actually making use of gamification through an interactive assessment. And they're arguably one of the best ways to engage consumers because we are naturally curious about our own aptitude. And I think that gamifying this education kind of gives consumers a chance to like immediately benchmark their own fraud and security proficiencies. They can get a better sense of where am I at? What do I need to do better? And it's not like, Tracy, you mentioned earlier that, you know, cybersecurity is scary. It makes the word itself makes people kind of freeze up a little bit, but it doesn't have to be. And I think one of the great things through, you know, a cyber assessment is the outcome of, okay, immediately, here are the three things that I can do that would increase my security immediately. If I just change my wireless router password, if I just, you know, use multi-factor authentication, it doesn't have to be the scary thing. And I think it's on FIs to take away that fear factor and make it accessible.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, you know, it's a little bit more fun, right? I mean, when you make it a game, if you make it a self-assessment, you're posing questions also that consumers might not even think about. You mentioned your wireless router. I'm sure the average consumer doesn't think about, you know, the fact that default passwords should be changed there, right? They may not think about social media use or how often, you know, they're changing their passwords. If they're reusing passwords, do they use a password manager? All these things are questions that the FI could be posing in a self-assessment that would help get the consumer thinking, hey, you know, maybe I should be looking at these things a little bit more closely. And we know if the consumer is more secure, in turn, it's going to make the FI more secure, right? So it's a win-win.
For sure. So let's go back to consumer privacy, which was our second pillar for the Cyber Trust and Banking Scorecard. I've said it before. I'll say it again, and I'm sure I'll say it again after this. Transparency matters. FIs are shouldering the responsibility for making updates to their privacy policy and any changes that they have to their data collection practices. And FIs really have to keep their customers up to date on what's going on. And I think that when an FI has a privacy policy that's comprehensive, it includes everything, and it's easy to understand, easy to read, in language that we can all take in and understand what's going on, that is fostering this sense of trust because the consumer understands what is happening with their data, their privacy, and anything that goes along with it. I think that transparency when it comes to data collection and, you know, marketing is also really important to establishing trust. You know, when you disclose the data collection or your tracking practices, it leads to that sense of cyber trust and security among consumers because they feel like they have more of a sense of control over what's going on with their data. And that sense of autonomy right there leads to independence and a greater sense of satisfaction, I think, which of course leads to cyber trust.
Yeah, and I'll just add one thing there, Suzanne, just to kind of, you know, reiterate what you had said. Have to get away from legalese. I mean, these privacy yes. policies have to be written in ways that the layperson will understand, right? That's one of the big things that, you know, some institutions are doing a better job than others, but all of them have room for improvement. And the other point that I'll make is the parity between online and mobile banking. So have to make it easy for your consumers to find the privacy policies through the mobile app as well as the online banking platform, right? Because you're going to have different groups of consumers who are going to be more apt to using the mobile app versus going online. So you just want to make sure that those policies are easy to find in both places.
Definitely. And I think one last point here in terms of consumer privacy is just the implications of a breach of trust. If a business is considered untrustworthy, betrays the trust of a consumer, the impact is not that substantial just because the consumer probably didn't have a lot of faith with them to begin with. They weren't doing a ton of business with this company anyway. But if an FI violates that cyber trust, because we talked about how trusted financial institutions are just inherently, that impact of a breach of trust is so much more significant because the consumer had a greater level of trust to begin with. And so I think that, you know, if you want to reduce the risk of attrition, reduce the risk of even just a consumer maybe taking some of their services away from their FI and finding other sources for this business, that's why you really have to focus on consumer privacy and fostering that sense of trust just within their own data and their own security. And then last but certainly not least, the final pillar is cybersecurity empowerment. You know, consumers expect their FI to provide functionality that is allowing them to, you know, monitor their own accounts, secure their own identities, and be accessible. Have these features and functionality available to them, like you said, Tracy, with privacy policy between both online banking and mobile banking. FIs can't forget about customers and members who maybe don't want to use the mobile app. Maybe they're not comfortable with that. Maybe they're more comfortable with calling a branch or going online to online banking. You risk alienation of a potentially vulnerable group of consumers by not offering things like phone calls for security alerts. You know, a lot of us are very digital centric. We do a lot through our phones, a lot through our mobile apps, but you still have to have these offerings for everyone. You want to include everybody with this.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'll just add one additional piece there, which, you know, I know you delve into more deeply in the report, but, you know, just making sure that you have educated tellers, educated call center staff, right? Because these are the same types of things. You may have a pretty substantial portion of your, you know, customer or member base that's just going to call the call center or that's going to stop in the branch, especially now that we're, you know, opening back up and people are actually visiting branches again in the wake of the pandemic. So totally agree with your point there, Suzanne, and it's something that all institutions should be thinking about.
Yep.
Suzanne, Tracy, you gave a lot of great insights and perspective in terms of like what needs to be done to kind of get some more out of you. What more should institutions be doing to cultivate and maintain cyber trust?
So, like I said, I'm going to say it again, be transparent. Transparency about everything from your privacy policy rights to the data collection to how, you know, you're using targeted marketing, educational materials, security features that are accessible and easily found for all consumers. Everything has to be made aware to a consumer if you want to foster cyber trust.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the points that you make in the report, you know, to Suzanne is that institutions really need to kind of lean into this role of being an educator, right? I mean, they're trusted. They're deemed to be much more secure, right? And are than many other industries and businesses. So take advantage of that, right? I mean, consumers are going to look to institutions for education, for support. Take advantage of it and use it as a way to just continually build on the trust that's already there.
Exactly. And I think just prioritizing education, whether it's, like you said, Tracy, with the actual employees of the financial institution, or it's just through the consumer themselves. Expand your topic coverage. Make use of all content formats. You want to maximize consumer engagement because anything that gives a consumer a better sense of independence and a better sense of control over their financial wellness as a whole is just going to lead to a greater long-lasting partnership.
Tracy and Suzanne, thank you so much for your insights and perspective. For those tuning in, you can learn more about the key findings and the Cyber Trust Banking Scorecard report, including the key steps financial institutions should follow to rise in the ranks, cultivate consumer cyber trust, and become leading trusted financial institutions by clicking on the link at the bottom of the article.